Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Jordana and Paul here at the beautiful TPC Golf Course in Blaine.
In lovely Blaine. Yep. We got about, 134 golfers up here for the SAVE tournament, the 15th annual SAVE tournament. SAVE, by the way, stands for Suicide Awareness, Voices of Education. Tough thing to talk about, but something we have to talk about.
And we will, on and off for the next 3 hours. We're going to have fascinating guests. We will take your calls and share your stories, and most importantly, raise awareness about suicide prevention.
Right.
But before we do that, we got to...
That's the cue.
We got to get you some money. We want to give you $1,000. The keyword for cash is really a... I don't know. It's kind of a poignant word.
It's a little eerie.
Yeah. The word is alive.
Alive.
A-L-I-V-E. And I don't think our fearless leaders at Entercom knew we were going to be doing this, but the word is alive. A-L-I-V-E. Text that word to this number, 72881. For 72881. I want to make sure we're on remote, so I want to make sure that's the right number for your chance to win $1,000. If you don't win now, don't worry. At 412, we'll have another chance to win. But again, 72881 is the number. The word is alive. A-L-I-V-E.
Did you have a good weekend?
Fantastic. I mean, you know, my kidlets are home, so it's just we swam in Cedar Lake. We just did our fun summer stuff that we can do now that they're home from camp. So thank you.
Every moment of every day. And that's words to live by all the time,
always.
Not just on the weekends.
Did you? You were up at the cabin?
Yeah, up at the cabin.
Doing manual labor?
Life is better, yeah. Raking the shoreline and mowing and blowing and weed whacking.
It's good for you.
It is.
Put some hair on that chest.
It's either going to keep me in shape or kill me.
It's all good. Do what she tells you.
That's right.
Young.
Absolutely. We're joined by Dan Rydenberg, Dr. Dan Rydenberg of SAVE, Executive Director. Dan, thank you for joining Jor and me today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for being here.
It's our pleasure. And again, I mean, we were here last year, so this is our second year out here. This is what, your 15th
year?
15th year.
Yeah, long time.
Look, many of us have been touched by depression. Everybody goes through down cycles. I don't care who you are, where you live, how much money you have. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's part of the human condition. We all go through down periods. And yet we've sort of attached a stigma to that somehow you should be able to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and just get over it. You know, we don't say that to people with diabetes who need medication to continue functioning. And yet when it comes to depression, it seems like people don't want to talk about it. We sweep it under the carpet. And yet the trends are going in the wrong direction. Since 1999, suicide deaths in Minnesota up nearly 40%. Two people will take their lives in Minnesota every day. You were saying 730 is the average number every year?
Yeah, somewhere between 730 and 750. The last year we have data for was, I think, 768 deaths. So right here in Minnesota, we have a lot of people that are dying by suicide. If we look at it nationally, we have somebody dying every 11 minutes. We have somebody attempting every 28 seconds. Every 28 seconds, somebody attempts to take their life. And most of the time, that's young people. People that are adults and seniors tend to die on their first attempt. So we have a lot of people this is impacting.
Has it always been like this? Is it does, in fact, seem to be getting worse. Would you call it an epidemic?
Wouldn't call it an epidemic. We've never really had an epidemic of suicide, but we definitely have a public health crisis around it. It's the 10th leading cause of death in this country. Depression alone is the second leading cause of disability in the world. In the world, it's the second leading. They project by 2020 it's going to be the leading cause of disability in the world, depression. It's a mental health issue that we really need to pay attention to.
The Wall Street Journal reported that after every one of these celebrity deaths, I mean, we lost Anthony Bourdain at
Kate
CNN,
Spade.
Kate Spade, that calls to suicide hotlines go up by 25%. So there's always this concern about contagion. Is that something you see or not?
Absolutely. The calls to the Lifeline do go up about 25 to 30%. They have increased at our organization 25%. It was true after Robin Williams died, and Robin Williams died the day of our golf tournament. You made the announcement here a few years ago in 2014 when he died to the participants. So we do see that. We saw that when Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington died as well. Contagion is a small phenomenon, happens about 1 to 3% of people, but we see this increase, and that actual increase is about 10 to 17 days after the media reports on suicide.
We want to get listener engagement. If you have questions about depression, about some of the cues, verbal or behavioral, text us 72881. We will take as many of your questions for Dr. Dan as we can here. You said something interesting. You said don't count on verbal cues. I mean, people who are potentially suicidal don't always come up and make it obvious, right?
That's correct. Most of us wait, and we think that somebody is going to come right out and say, here's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it this way at this time. The reality is it's a far more disguised verbal statement. They might say something like, everybody would be better off without me, or there just isn't any reason for me to be around any longer. So we actually want people to, we do want people to pay attention to some of those verbal cues, but really pay attention to the behavioral cues, withdrawing, pulling away, lack of interaction any longer, isolation. Those are the kinds of things we really want people to pay attention to.
You can text us at 81807 if you have a thought.
Yeah, what number did I give?
To...
I think I gave my bank account number.
Oh, you gave the contest
number. Oh, that's
number, the 72881.
I'm
yes,
getting my text numbers mixed up.
No. Our text line is 81807, and you can text us there if you want to talk to Dan, if you have any thoughts. You know, Dan, something that I was hoping to address with you, and I don't mean to get off topic here, or off your train of thought here, Paul. Sometimes, even when there is awareness about this and people are trying to get help, it still doesn't work. We had a dear family friend very recently, a young woman, committed suicide just in the past few months, and we knew she was troubled. Her mother knew she was troubled. Her coworkers knew she was troubled. And the suicide still happened. It was a second or third attempt, probably. When you're having a situation like that, this woman was, you know, almost 30 years old. She couldn't be watched 24/7. I felt so helpless after that time. And I know her loved one, and I wasn't all that close to her, she's a family friend, but I know people that were close to her felt that way too, and almost even more responsible because they did know. Do you see this a lot? And what can a family do when they're in that situation?
Can you do an intervention? I mean, what are the limitations of what you can and can't do if somebody is obviously suicidal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a really difficult situation. I'm really sorry for what happened there. We can do more for adolescents and for young people. We can actually force them. We can, you know, parents can bring them into a hospital and bring them into treatment and get them the help they need. It's much harder to do for an adult. For adults, you can sometimes go through a commitment procedure. There's even community commitment procedures, but the counties can enact a commitment procedure. Somebody's in a hospital. The hospital will petition for commitment.
So the person doesn't have to do it themselves. You say the hospital can petition them.
The hospital does it. Yep, that's primarily how that happens.
Okay.
But it's very difficult because we can't force people to get better. We can't force them to listen to the doctors and take their medicines as they're prescribed. And the hard part, it's a helpless feeling for families, right? It's unfortunately really not any different than any other disease. Some diseases, we simply can't get somebody better. Cancer, sometimes we can't. Some heart diseases, we simply can't get the people. They just give up. They give up their hope and their interest. Some other terminal diseases, people will just decide they don't want it anymore. And families watch that, and they have to watch their family member leave us. So it's very hard.
But I think what you said is very healing, that families need to know that sometimes there is no other way. They can't cure everything.
No, we can't. Sometimes there's just nothing we can do. It's a small number of those cases. We know that for people that take medicine, and go to therapy, there's about an 85% success rate. It's why we really try to encourage people to do both. We know that if you just do one or the other, it only works about half the time. Mm-hmm. But we know that we can treat these diseases. We can get people through them. It doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to be able to prevent every death, but we don't prevent every death of everything.
Dan, some of the cues, people who may be suicidal, talking about feeling hopeless, trapped, a burden on others, unusual mood swings, withdrawal from family, giving away important possessions, or even increased use of alcohol or drugs. Briefly, and we want to have you after the break, but you said listen to your gut. Can you explain?
Yeah, one of the things that most often happens is that after a tragedy has occurred in a family or a spouse has lost someone, when they talk to me, they say, I had a gut feeling. I had a gut feeling something was going on, and I should have done something. I should have asked that question. I should have been there. And there's always this guilt around suicide, but it's this gut feeling that I really try to help people pay more attention to. Our brains sometimes get in the way. Our brains try to convince us that it's not really going to happen, and so we don't ask the question. We don't reach out to the person. And then there's this lingering feeling, sense of guilt. But if your gut is telling you that something isn't right, something is uncharacteristic about the person that you care about, do something about it and do it now.
And we should point out, too, if you are having any of these feelings that you want to hurt yourself, there are steps you can take. You can certainly reach out locally, save.org. But there's a national hotline, 800-273-TALK, 800-273-8255, or you can text the crisis text line 741-741 and get instant gratification. Talk to somebody. It's really
That's
important
right.
that you reach out.
Right.
We'll continue with Dr. Dan Rydenberg at SAVED coming up right after this break on CCO. Jordana and Paul back with you at the annual SAVED tournament up at TPC, beautiful course up here in Blaine, PGA course.
We don't get to play.
No, we just get to admire the course.
We are admiring the course. We get to talk to Dan, but we do have the privilege of talking about something that is so important. Every year this is important, but boy, if suicide awareness hasn't been at the top of the news cycle this year with Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, locally we've had some friends and some big names that have gone away, and it's something to talk about this year.
Dan, one of our listeners writes in, years ago, I checked myself into a hospital because I was having suicidal thoughts. No actions, but I definitely had thoughts. While I was there for about 2 weeks, the therapy was intense and excellent. Seeking help is a sign of strength, not weakness.
Amen.
It really is, and too often people think that mental health is about a weakness or a character flaw or some kind of moral deficiency. It really isn't anything about that. It's actually a brain disease, and if we could get the public to understand that it is something that happens in the brain, whether it's a chemical imbalance or there's an electrical system imbalance or there's a structural problem within the brain combined with external factors that are hitting people, it would start to take away some of that stigma.
Yeah, you brought up the whole notion of stigma, and I don't know. I mean, there is no stigma with other chemical imbalances, with other diseases. Diabetes, again, is one that comes to mind. There are others, but that's a tough nut to crack. How do we get past that?
Well, part of it is programs like this, and the more awareness and the more education, and more people that are celebrities, like both of you here today, that are talking about this, that is going to make a difference. When we get to the place where we can actually take an X-ray, or we can take a blood test for people. That will help.
Will we get there? That will happen?
Oh, yes. That will
really?
Get there. Oh, yes. There are some scans that can be done right now that are done in labs to look at some of these things. It's not commonly done. But as we get there, that will help break down the stigma. People will realize this is a real disease, and it's not something people are asking for or trying to do.
Is there a genetic predisposition? I just went in for my annual physical, and the gal that took my blood pressure and weighed me and all that stuff, she said, how are you doing? How are you feeling? So it's like they dabbled around the edges. But, I mean, is this something that doctors should be screening for? Should there be a mental health screening to try to catch some of this?
There definitely should be some screening, some assessment that's done by all healthcare professionals for depression. And the U.S. Preventative Task Force recommends screening for depression. Not screening for suicide per se yet. We don't have a really good solid tool for that. But for depression, we do have some good tools. So questions should be asked, and they should be asked more regularly. And it should be more than just a checklist. You check one box, and then you keep going on. Something more has to happen around this topic, especially for males, because males don't like to talk about it.
Texter says, thank you for taking on this sensitive and important topic, mental health and suicide. I chair the Scott County Local Area Council on Mental Health. We've worked hard to bring services and crisis help to our community. Shakopee Savage, Scott County Sheriff's deputies are all crisis intervention trained to de-escalate mental health calls so those in need receive professional services. The work we've done has made a difference, but there's a lot more to do. That's from John Statler in Savage, Minnesota.
And that's really important because hospitalization isn't necessarily the first or best response for everybody. When we have these crisis teams that can go out on site, people can respond that are trained in how to talk to people that are in these crises, oftentimes they can be de-escalated and they can maintain where they're at. So, because we know sometimes hospitalization isn't the best course of action for people.
So what would you say to listeners? Maybe they have an extended family member. We're running out of time here. That's always the case. But somebody who's listening who suspects that maybe a cousin, a brother, a sister, an uncle, an aunt might be struggling with depression. What can they do? And I think a lot of people are reluctant to take that step. But it's really important if you feel it in your gut that somebody is struggling that you do what?
Yeah, so the first thing is learn. Go to our website, save.org, and you can learn the signs. You can learn the symptoms. You can learn how to ask the right questions. Second is to know that it is okay to ask the question. You are going to regret it if something happens. Even if they attempt and are saved, you're still going to regret not asking the question if you have the opportunity. So learn some things. Ask the question. We have research that says it's not going to hurt somebody. It's not going to lead them down that path. And the third thing that's probably most important out of all of that is to listen, to be available just to listen. Most of the time, we can get people through these very difficult, dark times if we're just available and we listen to help them. We can teach people how to do that, but people have to be willing and open to do that. We can't keep this topic anymore from the public.
We have to shine a light on this.
We do.
Well, thank you for what you are doing and what your amazing staff at SAVE is doing, based right here in Bloomington, global outreach. I know you're working with Facebook. You're working with
Netflix.
Congress. Netflix.
Mm-hmm. We had a big thing with Netflix this year and last year. Created the world's greatest toolkit for the Netflix series that was
13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, it was used around the world, so it's
good
a lot
for you.
Of work.
Well, good for us for having you in our community. So
thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we have so much news to get to today.
We do.
This most recent Keith Ellison scandal. We'll find out. Has anybody seen that videotape? Is it anywhere? Is it coming out? We're going to ask. Our own Adam Carter has been following that story all day. We'll chat about it here on CCO.
Radio.com.
Jordana and Paul here. We are out at TPC Golf Course for the Save Golf Suicide Awareness Golf Tournament. But the news goes on.
It does.
And there is much to discuss today. Yes, I promise we're going to get to the whole Omarosa interview. That's going to be at 4:35. It is riveting. But today, locally, Minnesota Democrat Keith Ellison is denying claims of domestic abuse just hours now before primary elections for state attorney general here in Minnesota. Our own Adam Carter has been following this story closely all day. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, happy to do it.
All right, so, yeah, walk us through it. When did the claims come out? And please, where's the video? Because we all want to hear it or see it.
Well, in elections, we usually have what are known as October surprises, stories that come out that threaten the candidacy, threaten the likability, votability of certain candidates. We had that last week with Lori Swanson, and now over the weekend we've got this story emerging, this alleged story emerging with Keith Ellison. This is a former girlfriend of his, Karen Monahan, and it was actually her son who on Saturday night posted a long statement on Facebook alleging that his mother, Karen Monahan, was abused by Representative Ellison when they were together. Their relationship ended in 2016. Then Karen Monahan took to Twitter. She had been tweeting in recent days about the Me Too movement, nothing specifically about Keith Ellison, but then she corroborated what her son had posted on Facebook, saying that she was indeed verbally and emotionally abused by Ellison during their relationship. And she says that she has video of Ellison dragging her off of a bed and using profanity, swearing at her. Now, this video has not been made public. It has not been seen other than by Karen Monahan and her son, who says he's seen the video, too. He said he was on her computer, opened this file, saw this video, and that's when he decided to make this statement. Ellison denies all these allegations, says the video simply does not exist because that incident did not happen. And now it's a matter of who do you believe? Do you believe her story, Karen Monahan, or do you believe Representative Ellison and the fact that this or like that his claims that this incident did not happen?
Adam, you know, that old adage, which I think is still true, innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
You know, I've heard
I mean, that you say that. That's a big question here. But we've been bringing that up and it's a very difficult discussion to have in the age of the Me Too movement, where mm-hmm. our first instinct is, of course, to believe women who come forward with these awful stories, whether it be sexual abuse, physical abuse. But you balance that with that. At what point do you believe someone who says, look, this did not happen the way she says it happened?
And I think it's the timing coming right before the primary that has some people scratching their heads. I know Karen Monahan yesterday tweeted out, what my son said is true. Every statement he made was true. Keith Ellison, you know you did that to me. I have given every opportunity to get help and heal. Even now, you are willing to say my son is lying and have me continue to leak more texts and info just so others will believe him. Does the timing of this coming right before the primary, I don't know, does that say something about the credibility of this account?
Well, sure it does. I mean, you have to look at the timing of this, and if you think that would not raise suspicions as to the validity of the story, you'd be foolish. But at the same point, at what point do we say, look, you know, again, it's this difficult conversation that we have with women or victims who've undergone this. You know, when is the right time to come forward? You know, there's probably tons of people saying, okay, well, look, if this happened and your relationship ended in 2016, why did we not hear about it before? I guess why weren't authorities contacted? But who are we to get in the mind of that victim as to how she dealt with it, if it did happen, and how she was dealing with it and how her son deals with it? All important questions to be had. But to just ignore the fact that, look, this is, you know, 48 hours from the time the primary happens, I mean, is certainly a big part of the story and the timing of it and why it comes out now.
And then, of course, the response by Keith Ellison. He has categorically denied all of this, correct?
He has denied it in a statement yesterday. We've heard nothing, at least WCC Radio has heard nothing from Representative Ellison today. We talked about that a little while ago. Certainly many of our shows trying to reach out to Congressman Ellison,
right,
to get an interview with him to further explain it, but it sure sounds like his campaign at least has decided to stay quiet at least until the primary is over, and to see what effect it has tomorrow will be interesting to be seen. If he wins that nomination tomorrow, mm-hmm. how much further does he address it? And if he loses, what becomes of it? Certainly that would have played a role, because he's a prohibitive favorite, I believe, in the race on name mm-hmm. recognition alone.
They say he might have already won with the absentee ballots. Is that possible?
I'm not sure. That's a great question. But, you know, DFL turnout, we've talked to Lois Olson and other political experts talking about the turnout tomorrow for Democrats especially is going to be so high, especially in District 5, Congressional mm-hmm. District 5 here, where now Ellison's seat that he's giving up is up for grabs. So turnout's going to be very high. What impact that has, and not only his opponents seizing on this opportunity to try to get more people to, you know, mark down their ballot for one of their candidates. Obviously, we've got four other candidates, four Democrat in the attorney general's race. So it remains to be seen. Really, no way to predict whether or not those absentee ballots will give the victory to Keith Ellison, no matter what happens tomorrow.
Adam, one of our listeners writes, timing, what? Would you rather have this come to light after the primary or after the election? No, but it would be nice if maybe there was a few weeks or a few months to do some vetting on this. I don't know. I mean, in the age of social media, it really has, I think, changed how politicians campaign. This notion that, you know, character assassination via Twitter. And I'm not defending Keith Ellison. I have no idea. None of us really know what happened except for, you know, Keith Ellison and this woman who's come forward. And yet it seems like people remember the insinuation. They don't remember the retraction, if the retraction ever comes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think a lot of us are just scratching our heads.
Again, a lot of people, absolutely. And I mean, me as an individual is wondering why, okay, you know, if this happened, how come you don't contact the police? How come you don't, this certainly it's not like Keith Ellison was not a public figure before he ran for attorney general.
Right.
He's the deputy chair of the DNC. He's a congressman from Minnesota. But again, I've never been in that position. I'm obviously not a woman. B, I've never been assaulted like that by somebody that I've been in a relationship with. So I can't put myself in that person's mind and answer those questions as to why not then and why now.
But now that it's out there, it's like you say there's a tape, you say it's on your mom's computer, even if she didn't want to come forward. And I understand often victims don't. Trust me, I'm very sensitive to that. But now the son wants to stand up for her. This is how it's all come out because of the son. So then where's the tape? Then if this is damn, you can't just go out there and defame somebody that way and not have the evidence to back it up.
That's right. And I mean, if she has that evidence, obviously people want to see that. She sent some, Minnesota Public Radio, she sent some text messages between her and Keith Ellison, and reading those text messages, there's nothing terribly damning in those text messages, nothing
correct.
Damning at all. I mean, it seems very cordial at times. There is some contention, but of course there would be that if two people are having their relationship end. But there's no evidence that he acknowledges any sort of abuse. There's no accusations on her part in those texts of any sort of abuse. So what those reveal, really not much, not just looking as an outsider, doesn't seem to be defending her position much.
Thanks for the color on this, Adam.
Sure.
Great, great explainer.
Yeah,
thanks
you,
for following Adam. This.
Anytime.
It's our own Adam
yep.
Carter. Yeah, you got it. It's our own Adam Carter. They'll delve into more of this, of course, at 6 o'clock when they do their half an hour of news here on CCO.
I'm not defending Keith Ellis. I'm not.
No, we're just asking the questions.
I don't know what happened, but if this happened and there's a video.
Well, that's it. Otherwise, no one's ever going to know what happened. Only Keith Ellison and Karen Monahan, the people that were in that bedroom.
Said.
But if there's a video and you saying this about him, then you got to back that up.
Produce.
You got to back that up. That's right. All right. It's 3:49. Let's see. Where's our Wicks and
Jewelers? Wicks and Jewelers time. From jewelry repair to appraisals and custom design, Wicks and Jewelers offers a complete range of jewelry services all under one roof. Jordana and Paul out at TPC in Blaine, and we're talking about depression. We're talking about suicide awareness. I want to give these phone numbers one more time. If you are having feelings that perhaps you want to hurt yourself, or if you know somebody in your family or a friend or a neighbor, give this number a call, 800-273-TALK, 800-273-TALK. Or there's a crisis text line, and you can get somebody right now via text 741-741.
Our focus, of course, out here during the Pop Communications Save Golf Tournament is, of course, suicide awareness. But we are talking about other news today as well. We just talked about the Keith Ellison story. We'll be updating you on that if we hear any news. Also, the big story of the weekend was the Omarosa book and her explosive interview with Chuck Todd. Chuck Todd.
Tuck Todd. No, I like Tuck Todd's show.
Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
So we're going to.
I prefer Chuck.
Tuck Todd.
Tuck.
So we're going to play that for you because it was mind blowing. We'll play that for you at 4:35.
Oh, boy. It never ends, does it?
It never ends.
It's a carousel of craziness.
It never ends. When we get back from the break, though, Frank Vassalero here on CCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.